Democrat James Carville once described Pennsylvania as Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle. Political analysts and editorials refer to central Pennsylvania as the T in statewide elections. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Scranton, and Wilkes-Barre generally vote for Democratic candidates, while the majority of the counties in the central part of the state vote Republican. As a result, maps showing the outcomes of statewide elections invariably form a T shape. We're calling this podcast The T, but that doesn't mean we're taking an editorial stance, either right or left. We'll let you decide that. I'm Emma Ganader, social media editor and general assignment reporter for The Daily Item, and the producer of this podcast. While Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton is still in the lead, a recent Franklin and Marshall poll found her rival, Donald Trump, has gained traction with Pennsylvania voters, closing the gap by only 7 percentage points. What could this mean for the results of the November election? How is Hillary Clinton maintaining her lead? Just who is Donald Trump popular with? Host Rick Dandy's Daily Item political reporter talks with Franklin and Marshall professor Dr. G. Terry Madonna, director of the college's Center for Politics and Public Affairs and its college poll about this controversial election.
All right. Could you just give me some takeaway points on the poll that you released today?
Yeah, well, the big takeaway is that Donald Trump has closed the gap between himself and Secretary Clinton and among Pennsylvania voters. She now leads by 7. A month ago after the Democratic convention, she led by 11. And this is consistent with a poll out a day or so ago put out by Monmouth College, which showed Trump up. Showed Hillary Clinton up by 8 percentage points. So we're really talking about two polls that literally have just about the same information relative to the reasons why someone's ahead and a candidate's catching up, and then when you look at some of the other factors that are important.
This wasn't totally unexpected. This came
after the
convention.
Oh, Clinton took the big lead after her convention when she got a 6 to 7 point bounce, and Trump had a horrible 2 weeks when he, lambasted Captain Khan, the American Muslim soldier who was killed in Iraq. And, of course, his father had been at the Democratic convention and beat up on Trump. Then he had the business with the Second Amendment. Then he had the business with whether President Obama founded ISIS. It was a horrific 2 weeks for him. And she took, in this state, a 9.2 percentage point lead in what was a 1 point lead for Donald Trump after his convention. So we've seen a remarkable shift to giving Clinton a 9-point lead, and how far this goes back remains to be seen, meaning comeback by Trump. We you can't project in this election. Of all the elections, this is one that you certainly can't project very far.
Well, certainly a seven-point lead is still pretty good with 2 months left.
Oh, look, there's no doubt about it. I mean, this is a sizable lead that you just can't dismiss. It's going to take a decided change in the environment, change in, the nature of this election in order for Trump to go lower, to get down and make the race even more competitive. There's no doubt about that.
He's still holding on to what you've described in your takeaway points that you sent me to the white, non-college voter.
That's exactly right. He's winning white voters without high school educations. Basically, we're talking about voters who have about 50,000 in income or less, who are located in the southwest and southeast, I'm sorry, in the southwest and northeast, predominantly. I'm not saying there aren't, you know, this kind of voter elsewhere in terms of the demographic, but that's where they predominate. Many of them in the old mining and mill towns out in the southwest, up in Luzerne and Lackawanna counties in the old anthracite coal mining area. By the way, Luzerne County was, percentage-wise, Trump's best county during the end of the primary, where he carried all 67 Pennsylvania counties.
And Secretary Clinton, though, is still held on to women.
Yeah, she wins. Yeah, on the other, well, let's go back to college-educated voters. They were over 40% of the electorate, 42-43% in 2012. College-educated voters, Clinton wins those pretty handily. He wins voters with incomes under 50,000, as I indicated before, and voters with high school educations or less. When it comes to gender, she wins women and he wins men. Now, one of the reasons the race has tightened is that he has cut into her lead among women by a couple of percentage points, just enough to, you know, begin to narrow the lead somewhat. So in terms of the gender, this is probably too strongly put, but, you know, women tend not to like Trump and men tend not to like Secretary Clinton. That's a clear exaggeration, but I think you get the point. And then in terms of geography, and this is very important, Trump has closed the gap in the Philadelphia suburbs, Chester, Bucks, Montgomery, and Delaware counties, to about 15 points. It was much larger in the previous Franklin and Marshall College poll. So he's doing better in the vote-rich Philadelphia suburbs. Those four counties contributed 1.2 million out of the 5.5 million votes that were cast in the 2012 presidential election. She does extraordinarily very well, over 70% in our poll, and I think it will grow over time. She does very well with the minority voters, as you would expect. That's very consistent with what we've seen nationally as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the suburbs. That's a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going on down there is that these are the voters more likely to say, gee, I normally vote Republican, but you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do with Trump. I'll come back down ballot to Senator Toomey and the Republican running for Congress. But Trump, they're a little dicey on that one. They're a little less clear about what they're likely to do. And I think over the last couple of weeks, he certainly won a few, more of them over. Not enough. You can't get if you lose the suburbs and you lose them substantially, there's virtually no way you can win the rest of the state because they're so large, as I indicated before, 1.2 million out of 5.5 million voters. I mean, numbers matter here. You know, size matters, and these are fairly substantial counties, Montgomery being the third largest in the state.
Yeah. All right, two more questions, Terry.
Sure.
I've heard a lot of him talking. You know, he says lots of things. I've heard them talking about the so-called silent majority of people who are going
to vote
for him in a wave that pollsters have not been able to measure. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any evidence right now that's occurring. I understand. I've heard that. You know, his supporters have been on cable TV talking a lot about that. Some of that's even appeared in print. I don't think we're seeing much of that. There probably, if you take the voters who say they haven't made up their mind, with some of the voters who say they could switch, you know, they could go from, they're supporting one candidate, but they could support another candidate. You're probably up to 15, 18, 19%. if you push it hard. And there isn't any doubt that, you know, there's room to grow for both of these candidates. I just don't see the so-called silent majority out there in any meaningful way. I just don't get any sense yet that somehow, some way. Now, look, he did do something, and I think here's where it's based on. He did draw a fairly large number of people out in the primaries. In our state, for example, he won by 35%. All of our polls had him winning, but none of them grasped the 35% number. Mm. You know, he was up more than the average of the last several polls before April 26th primary. So overall here, I just don't see a large number. Is there the possibility that there's a couple of percent here and there? Yeah. But I don't think it's enough at this point to swing the election.
Do you think the immigration speech is going to have any effect on your numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is probably yes. I mean, here's the point. Now, this is subjective, my opinion. I thought the meeting with the Mexican president did him a great deal of good. He stood up with, you know, before a national audience with the president of another country and comported himself very well. I don't think that's even arguable. When folks said that, you know, you can't send him out, he'd be an embarrassment, he'd say something untoward or provocative. But then coming back here to the United States when he gave the talk in Arizona, he really doubled down on his issues of, well, we're going to get rid of, kick out 11 or 12 million illegal immigrants and build a wall. And there was no sort of reach out, you know what I mean, to broaden his pool. He must expand his support. And comments like that don't allow him to do it. Now, I'm not getting into whether it's right or wrong what he said. I'm talking about the politics of it. He has to expand his base, Rick. He can't narrow it. And that's his biggest problem. And if he had just focused on sanctuary cities and getting rid of the illegal, the bad ones among the illegal immigrants, you know, those who commit crimes, I think that would have gone. I mean, that is not unpopular. But he broadened it again to include all immigrants, illegal immigrants here. They'd have to go back to where they came from and apply all over again. That's just not going to help him expand his base, which he has to do in order to have any possibility of winning not just Pennsylvania, but the 270 electoral votes that he needs.
Okay, absolute last question. Touch on the Senate race. You have McGinty up by 5 points, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Katie McGinty and Pat Toomey are locked in now one of the top two Senate races in the entire nation. There isn't any doubt that if McGinty and or Toomey win the Senate seat, that the Senate will probably go with their respective party. It's now the second most expensive Senate race in the country, and the advertising is pouring in. This will probably exceed the $40 million raised and spent by Senator Casey and his opponent in 2012, which made it the most expensive U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania history. Katie McGinty's lead in my poll and in the Monmouth poll, also released this week by 4, I think illustrates the coattail effect. In other words, as Secretary Clinton has built up a lead, whether it's 7 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, these are just the numbers that Clinton has had over the past 2 weeks in our state in various other polls. As she has built up the lead, McGinty has risen in her polling largely because of the coattail effect. And what Senator Toomey has to do is to get a larger share of ticket splitting. The better Hillary Clinton does, the more likely that McGinty will do better, requiring Toomey to get a higher proportion of ticket splitters, meaning people that might vote for Clinton on the top of the ticket. And, you know, okay, where do they go now? He hopes, of course, they go for him, and that means split their ticket. And
yeah.
Once you get above four, five, six, it really becomes very difficult because of the huge number that you have to achieve.
Interesting. Terry, thank you so much for giving me some of your time, and we'll be talking again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. The Tea is hosted by Daily Item political reporter Rick Dandies and produced by me, Daily Item social media editor Emma Ganader. We would like to thank Franklin and Marshall professor Dr. G. Terry Madonna for his time, our editor Dennis Lyons for supporting this podcast, and Audioboom.com for hosting us. Instrumental music is The President's March, as played by the U.S. Army Old Guard Fife and Drums Corps. Music provided by freemusicarchive.com. Follow us on iTunes or our hosting site, audioboom.com.